Our third speaker is Glenda Kickett. Glenda is a Wajak and Baladong woman from the Bibbulmun Noongar Nation. Glenda is the manager, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Partnership and Engagement and Therapeutic Services, Aboriginal Children and Families, and the Australian Childhood Foundation. Prior to taking up the position, Glenda was the executive manager of Jua Minda Centre Care for 13 years. Glenda has a Bachelor of Social Work from the University of Western Australia, a Master of Arts in Indigenous Research and Development from Curtin University, and Doctor of Philosophy through the School of Social Work at the University of Western Australia. Glenda has served as the chairperson of NAIDOC Perth Incorporated from 2008 until current day. Is a member of the Noongar Child Protection Council, serves as co-chair for Social Reinvestment WA, and is a board member of Glass Jars, Shooting Stars Australia, Netball WA, and Accuse Bonding. Glenda is passionate about her culture, children and young people, and the possibilities of what can be achieved for our future when we talk with one voice and walk the journey together, and also how we bring others on that journey. Please come to the floor.
Thank you, Indigo. I've seen Indigo grow up, actually. I'm part of many NAIDOC events, and if you haven't heard Indigo sing, you're really missing out, because she is amazing. Kai and hello, and I'd just also like to thank our Quabadoc Yok and my Jugun, my sister Robin Collard, for that wonderful welcome to country. And I'd just like to acknowledge, you know, that we are in Wajak Noongar Boodja, and just to acknowledge my great-grandmothers, who's Carla Meyer, campfires are Katakumba, Jinning and Bow, and Carl Jukin, which is King's Park and Gallup, or Kalup, place of fire, which is Munger's Lake. And this is our connection to our Boodja. It's really great to be here today, and I thank Tony for inviting me to speak and to connect with all these wonderful speakers here as well, and also with people I haven't seen for quite a while. And I'd just like to acknowledge Ken Wyatt. Ken's been part of my life for quite a long time and part of my journey, particularly in education, and it's really wonderful to see him here and welcome him back to our community. So when we talk about poverty for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, it is within the context of a number of social indicators across domains of health, housing and homelessness, income, employment, law and justice, all which are relative to issues of equity and access, of which various forms of racism and discrimination are apparent. These social and economic issues are underlying indicators of trauma, which is intergenerational, multigenerational and transgenerational, and are the lived experiences of our people from colonisation and settler societies that have significantly impacted our culture and social systems and our way of life. The concept of poverty did not exist in our societies and for our families prior to settlement, because we cared for everyone and everything within our family groups and lived off our environments as set out through our cultural and social systems, obligations and protocols. Poverty is a white Western concept used to describe our societies, way of life and families, and the interconnected social and economic systems, which is seen as our lot in life, given that progressive government policies and practices defined and categorised us and have controlled our daily lives and created a cycle of dependency on welfare, transmitted from one generation to another, of which the entrenched disadvantage of our people and communities is embedded within our families and communities. Christine Chu, in her report on Aboriginal child poverty, outlined that the social indicators, as mentioned above, are for Aboriginal families material poverty and is secondary to that of non-material poverty, which are the loss of children through removal, the loss of identity, loss of spiritual and cultural heritage, the loss of contact with the land, and the loss of dignity and self-respect through oppression. She considers that material poverty and income poverty and non-income poverty, such as housing and health, and Aboriginal people's experience of material poverty, lack of food, water and shelter, and relative poverty, lack of decent standards of material living conditions. These indicators, material and non-material, absolute and relative, indicate that Aboriginal people are by far the most disadvantaged group in Australia. How can this be, given Australia is a first world nation, but Aboriginal people face third world living conditions, poor health and educational outcomes and low unemployment and low life expectancy, and are classified as Fourth Nations peoples within a nation state? Maggie Brady states that the core aspect of poverty and health as social determinants is Aboriginality itself, and it is within this context that poverty for Aboriginal people and communities is complex and multifaceted and is across a number of domains as they intersect and compound each other. Aboriginal people and communities experience absolute poverty as severe deprivation of basic human rights, including and basic human needs, including food, safe drinking water, sanitation facilities, health, shelter, education, and access to information. Certainly, these indicators of poverty impact on the ability of parents, grandparents, and extended family to provide appropriate care for their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, because when you live below the defined poverty line, what becomes a priority and your reality? Paying your rent or feeding your family when your welfare payment may not cover both, or children are sent to school without breakfast or lunch because their parents have no pay. Because they have to pay for electricity or gas so that the children can have a warm shower to go to school. And because of cultural obligations, the house may be overcrowded and there is no money to buy food and to have three meals a day. My experience of poverty led me to being placed in care for 9 years of my life. And then working in education, visiting families, hearing their stories of poverty led me to become a social worker. Working with Aboriginal children in the school system, and then becoming the executive manager of Juruminda and seeing Aboriginal children come into care into our houses who would hoard food because they did not know where their next meal would come from, and that was a challenge for us. Poverty is applied as an indicator for child neglect, which is one of the main reasons for why Aboriginal children come to the attention of child protection and are then more often to be removed from their families, cultures and communities and placed into out-of-home care away from culture and country, their family and community. What is seen as a poor standard of living and other issues associated with care safety, as well as health and education, which are reasons for apprehension. The Family Matters 2021 report highlights the impact of poverty, homelessness, intergenerational trauma and social exclusion of families and inadequate responses required, and that economic disadvantage is a significant driver of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children's overrepresentation in child protection systems. The report also states that Western Australia has the highest representation of Aboriginal and young people in out-of-home care nationally, lowest proportion of expenditure on family support and intensive family support, comparatively low Aboriginal preschool attendance, third highest use of permanent care orders, and with 18 Aboriginal children in care for every one non-Indigenous child, and with Aboriginal children comprising 56% of all children in care. This is alarming, and advocacy for the needs and rights for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children is minimal in Western Australia. We do not have a peak body to provide advocacy, oversight and accountability for those systems that impact our children and families. And we do not have a dedicated Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Children's Commissioner. Sorry, Jack, I love you, but this is a burden we've been carrying for a while, to pursue better services and outcomes for our children with legislative powers and oversight. And these are two areas that leaders in our community continue to discuss and advocate for with government. The Close the Gap 2021 campaign report outlines that there is a need for holistic social and emotional wellbeing services for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, and for reform through strength-based community-led action, which can be achieved when there's matching political will and investment, and to empower Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders and workforce to provide the solutions for health and wellbeing, early intervention and prevention services. Dr. Pat Dudgeon, a Bardi woman and Indigenous psychologist, state that within the context of Indigenous social and emotional wellbeing is a collective cultural understanding and knowledge system vital to our wellbeing and cultural survival. It is holistic and encompasses mental and physical health, culture and spiritual health, of which land is central to our wellbeing. Social-emotional wellbeing is a positive state of mental health associated with a strong and sustaining cultural identity, community and family life that provides a source of strength against adversity, poverty, neglect and other life challenges. SNAKE, NATSL's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Child Report Card, state that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children have a right to equal access to services, and there needs to be urgent steps taken to address these barriers in regard to health, housing, education, mental health and disability. The Noongar Family Safety Wellbeing Council, from our roundtable meetings report, state, we agree that Aboriginal children need to grow up safe, connected to family, community and culture, and that Aboriginal people's right to autonomy and self-determination should be supported through respectful engagement and shared decision-making. Significantly, the Uluru Statement from the Heart states, proportionately, we are the most incarcerated people on the planet. We are not innate criminal people. Our children are alienated from their families at unprecedented rates. This cannot be because we do not love them, and our youth languish in detention in obscene numbers. They should be a hope for the future. These dimensions of our crisis tell plainly the structural nature of our problem. This is the torment of our powerlessness. As a nation, our children are our future, but we still have a long way to go to ensure the rights and best interests of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, which is the responsibility of all of us. I do feel hopeful for the future, though, with a number of local child and family service initiatives taking place across the sector in collaboration with the government, which are being led by Aboriginal community-controlled organisations in communities in regard to early intervention and the piloting of the Aboriginal family-led decision-making to give voice to our families in the decisions which impact their children, and for family contact and reunification to be a reality. Palkalu woman Dr. Helen Milroy states, our children are a gift, born from country into family, ancestry and culture, as enduring as the universe, connected for eternity through love, life and spirit. Thank you for listening to me as we continue to talk about our children. Buddha.